You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Hello, One of Us listeners. My name is Nick. You may recognize my voice from One of Us shows such as The Screener Squad, The Final Watch series, and occasionally The Breakfast Pub. Recently, I ventured into the world of audiobooks and created my own production company, Mercs with Mics, which so far has been quite successful. The bad news is that it's a little too successful for me to actually keep up with the workload on. So I'm looking for some freelance audio editors to help me out with some basic editing. Things like editing out flub takes, loud breathing between dialogue, and the elimination of clicks and pops and other artifacts that might end up on the audio. Payment would start at the rate of $70 per full hour of edited audio. I'm also looking for narrators, with a decent home recording setup, and at least some previous experience in acting. If you are interested in either of these positions, please contact me at mercswithmics@gmail.com. Thank you for your time, and a special thanks to all the listeners who support OneOfUs.net and keep this wonderful site going. You make me proud to be One of Us.
OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net, keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well. Everybody ready for the Twitter shitstorm that's about to hit? Batten down the hatches, folks, because we're in for an online war of the you shouldn't put politics in movies types.
Unless they're the politics we like, in which case that's fine.
You know, and I'm not going to say that Richard Jewell, directed by Clint Eastwood, does not have that in there, certainly, because it most certainly is in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little cartoonish and silly,
yes.
But at the same time, I realize this as well, people saying it's Eastwood's best film in 10 years, and it probably is, but have you seen the other films he made in the last 10 years? It's still, I think, a pretty solid film, despite real issues that I have with it.
It's probably the best film made by a legendary 89-year-old director you're going to see this Christmas.
Indeed.
Wait, how old is Scorsese?
He's a spring chicken compared to the Eastwood.
Yeah, I suspect that's true as well. Clint Eastwood always looked old even when he was first getting his break, you know? I remember we watched Michael Cimino's first film, Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, which was like 70s movie, and Eastwood's in it, and he's playing the older guy.
Well, the thing is, people forget, because Eastwood has been around since the 50s, and he was, by the time he was like, he was doing spaghetti westerns, he was kind of considered washed up. He was like, well, I'm 30 something years old. I still haven't made a big hit. Everybody thinks of me from that stupid TV show I was on. So I got nothing better to do than go to Italy and make some crappy movie nobody's ever going to see.
It's like it's like the Rick Dalton thing from Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, exactly.
He was the washed up TV actor who went over there and became a star. Yeah.
That is exactly the Clint. And I don't think enough people caught that, Alan. Good for you. Because I was like, why aren't people talking about him as a Clint Eastwood type character? But either way, he did manage to shift gears and become a director, and more often than not, he is solid. Even at this, he is solid.
I mean, despite his politics, which I've always... I mean, he's never gone to the point of being to the right where I'm like, man, go fucking burn in hell, you piece of shit, like I have with some people. But
not
he is still...
Not even the empty chair?
But that was just stupid. That was just a stunt. But he's still way more conservative than is to my taste. But at the same time, I got to give the guy full credit. He has made some of my favorite movies of all time.
Unforgiven is a top 10-ish movie for me. I fucking love
it. He's made so many great movies, and I remember just going through this period of massive disappointment over the last decade where he just had so many disappointments where it was like, wow, what happened?
Well, the problem is, after Unforgiven, everybody thought, wow, this is the one Clint Eastwood is going out on. This is his masterpiece. He can now ride off into the sunset. That's what everybody wanted, and Clint Eastwood was like, I'm 65 years old. I'm not going anywhere. What the hell's wrong with you people? But when I was 17 years old, I thought, well, 65, you might as well just lie down and die. Right. That's ancient.
Yeah, it's like he might
especially
die
in Hollywood years, multiplied by 12.
Right. But
Clint Eastwood takes very good care of himself. The man is still quite spry, and he's directing circles out around a lot of younger
It's all those film threesomes.
Well, like, yeah, no, right?
Keeps
the joints loose, if you know what I mean.
I mean, he definitely knows how to shoot a film, and Still, no one's going to put Richard Jewell up against his masterpieces. It is a overall pretty sturdy film. What it's based on is an article that was published in Vanity Fair in 1997, which was a in-depth look at real-life guy Richard Jewell, who was this sort of dopey middle America, redneck, but not like outrageous redneck. He's just kind of he's like the guy.
He's a schlubby, nice guy.
He's portrayed as like dim but sweet. Dim but dumb, but
living with his mom, overweight, probably never got out of the house all that much.
Yeah, might still be a virgin.
Right. Although I looked in the wiki, he was married.
He did get married.
Definitely not gay, though.
Definitely not gay. He wants to make very clear he is not gay. But he was one of those guys who just believed in law enforcement. And he was determined he was going to be a member of law enforcement.
And doing good.
And he just was never really bright enough to anyone to take him too seriously. Plus, he was overzealous. He had those series of jobs where he would keep doing things that you're not allowed to do because, like, yeah, but, you know, I was trying to go for it and help out.
A little bit of power went to his head. And, you know, you do see this with some rent-a-cops or a certain type of person who enjoys dressing up as an authority figure just because they like the power.
Well, it's not necessarily
and that comes to hang him in that. The end, or at least gets him in
like, trouble. Because Chris and I actually helped out with the National Guard this past week, and one of the things is, like, we were pretending to be victims in a bombing, and one of my, you know, you get a personality, and one of mine was helpful. And they mention, it's like, helpful doesn't necessarily mean that that's a good thing.
Right.
Because it's like, you could be like, hey, I want to go up and do this, but if there's a protocol and there's things that need to be done a certain way, you going up and being like, hey, I can, you know, form the lines and I can do the clipboards and stuff. Like, no, we need you to be over here doing things the way that we do them so that we can be efficient. Yeah. And it seems like...
Which is probably why he didn't succeed in
Yeah, exactly. Process. It seems like that he, Jewell, was the type of guy who wants to be helpful, but in a way that's like, you being helpful means that this person got off because you broke the rules.
At the time when the Summer Olympics were happening in Atlanta, Georgia in 1996, at that time he was working as a security guard for it, and he happened to all but stumble across a bag that was left by the actual guy who did the bombing underneath a bench.
And, Eric Rudolph
and
was his
was
name.
Like calling everyone, hey, suspicious bag, not shutting up. Something anybody else would have probably just ignored. Big whoop.
There's well, they originally thought it was just filled with beers.
Yeah, exactly. But he kept pushing and he's like, no, get the real security people over here, the serious cops. And they opened it, like, sure enough, there's pipe bombs in it. And they managed to get people, because of him, far enough away from it that the damage was considerably less than it would have been.
Yeah.
Like, I think two people died.
One of them...
Over 100 people injured.
Over 100 people injured. Mm-hmm. The one person who died from injuries, again, I looked up Wiki, was one woman, Alice Hawthorne. They kind of focused on her a little bit, but they didn't give her a name, but they did focus a little bit of camera on her. The other was a camera dude who had a heart attack trying to go over and to film it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay,
again,
wow.
Wiki.
Right. Yeah.
So only one person died from the injuries.
You see those people, and this is, again, where Eastwood does such a good job of humanizing people, which is why it's so strange that he then takes the other characters and turns them into cartoons.
Yeah.
Because Richard Jewell should be a cartoon. He's a Saturday Night Live character, and yet he invests him with a lot of heart, as does Paul Walter Hauser, and what has to be a career best performance from him.
Oh, yeah. He was Itanya. He was great in that as well.
True.
But he, at first, is hailed as a hero, and he couldn't be happier, and his mom is happier. It was like, oh, you were such a hero. You saved all these lives. And then almost immediately, of course, things turned sour.
3 days later.
America media.
Yeah. Olivia Wilde playing a muckraking journalist for the Atlanta, I forget what. The
Atlanta Globe or something.
Yeah. Basically, bribes with sex John Hamm, who is an FBI agent looking into this, say, hey, come on, seriously.
The newspaper itself is real pissed about that they did that in the movie.
Who are you looking at? And he says, well, I mean, we're, of course, going to look at the security guard because a lot of, you know, the guy kind of fits a profile of the guy who wants to be a cop and he's failed at it. I mean, this has happened before, this sort of thing. And so she jumps on it and runs with the story. And like the next day, he is turned from hero to villain.
Which is funny because you don't hear the FBI getting mad about it. Our guys would never give up information like that for sex. Like,
right.
I mean, that's what was so unrealistic about that scene. One, she's practically throwing herself on top of him to get this story, making it very clear that she's willing to do the deed to get a lead. But he actually tells her that before she actually commits to having sex with him. And also, John Hamm, come on. Does that dude really need to be casual into sex? We can just throw themselves at him anyway.
He's John Hamm.
She doesn't need anything from him.
I think that's actually kind of the film's attempt at nuance in that scene. Yeah. Where it's like the sex is, she didn't have sex to get the information. He gave the information and they just wanted to have sex. The film does a sloppy job of it trying to make, like, it's not like she's slut out there just whoring herself for information, but the movie is doing that, but it's trying to kind of get around it by being, but see, she had it, so she
there
just wanted
no
to.
There was no quid pro quo,
or,
Alan.
Or you might call it quim pro quo.
Oh, it's
a very good on you for using a Victorian obscenity.
It's a sloppy attempt at nuance, I think, in that scene. Yeah. There's a couple confusing, like confounding scenes like that in the movie.
It was like both the FBI and her in particular, and even to a slight extent the lawyer as well, you know, you'd said cartoon, and that's actually the exact term I used in our little written review that you give to the theater, is that I was watching it and it's like, this is so blatantly unethical, so, and with the FBI's case, so blatantly illegal. That's why I looked up the wikis, like, how much of this is true, and how much of this is Clint Eastwood's libertarian conservative propaganda?
And they did, in fact, they tried to trick Richard Jewell into doing things that were definitely against his constitutional rights.
Yeah, the very scene early on. Where they trick him saying it's a video.
But he's just smart enough to realize something is off here, and says, I gotta talk to my lawyers. He calls up an old employer played by Sam Rockwell, who he got along with really well, like a job, I think they said like 10 years beforehand. He's like, look, I need you. And Rockwell jumps into the fray immediately like a dog with a bone.
He's a maverick because he wears shorts to work.
And
he's
he
got a sticker
his
on his wall that says, you know, I fear government more than I fear terrorists. And I'm like, okay,
and
I don't know what you need. The only thing he didn't do out of the libertarian playbook is start screaming, am I being detained?
Right.
And he doesn't have a lot of clients because he's a maverick who doesn't go corporate. You know, he defends the little guy.
I will say, like, although he is a bit of a cartoon of a lawyer, I thought that the libertarian stuff with him, as it were, the conservative stuff, is literally kept to background images on the wall. They do not, like, turn that into a big part of his
although
character.
Although it is really irritating to see that damn bumper sticker every time you go into his office.
Every single time. I forget where I read it, but someone else pointed out, oh, and did anyone else think it was meaningful at all that his really helpful aide is Russian?
Unless that was the real person.
I don't know.
The time of card at the end said it was a real person.
That's so fair. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
But it is, speaking of that bumper sticker, it's like that. It speaks to a thing that has bugged me so much with Eastwood lately. Is like there's a laziness to aspects of the filmmaking. Like, I think there's like 5 sets this entire movie. I don't know how many times I can see people walk into Richard Jewell's apartment, and apparently when you get a lawyer, he hangs out with you all the time in your apartment, and that's it. Like, because it's just like, it seems it's easy when it's like, we need 5 sets. I'm shooting this thing in 7 days.
He paid for it.
And it's just like,
he's going to use it, damn it.
Yeah, it's an efficient filmmaker.
The Olympics. There's Richard Jewell's apartment. There's Sam Rockwell's office.
There's the media room.
The media room and the FBI office. And that's it.
The restaurant.
Oh, yeah. No, in the restaurant.
But it's like, how many times are we going in and out of Richard Jewell's apartment? There's a thing about the movie where it gets a little...
That was exactly what Richard Jewell was thinking. How many times are these guys going to come in and out of my apartment? But like, why won't they leave?
The visual, that aspect of it left it kind of like, there's a repetitive nature and it kind of gets like drug out to a degree that I don't think it's really necessary as the movie goes on. And a lot of it has to do with like, it's not necessarily like appealing visually. It gets really dull after a while.
But I actually appreciated the fact that this is something I admire, that the production designers, his old production designer passed away many years ago. A guy, ancient dude that had been working with Eastwood forever. But these sets look and feel lived in a way a lot of movie sets don't.
Yes.
Oh, no, I will say...
It feels like a cramped little apartment where this guy lives with his mom, but they keep it neat. They're not filthy people. you know, but it doesn't also look like Hollywood. That's something that I admire about Eastwood in this movie, in that he manages to make real people's lives, real environments, feel like places you've actually been.
The ones
rather
he,
than Hollywood eyes.
Like, it's funny, because, like, I didn't say the sets were bad. I said there were not many of them.
That's true.
I agree with you, like, the humanization of Richard Jewell and his mom, to a degree,
well,
the lawyer.
Where was he gonna go?
I mean, but the rest of the movie is so Hollywood-y. I mean, like, we're talking about, like, you really delve into the lives of these people, but then, like, that reporter, the FBI agent, everything else about the movie is, like, big Hollywood, to the point it feels like a children's movie. Right.
But the recreation
of the simplicity
Olympics
of the
it's one
mechanics.
Of these, like, if you're going to go into a political, like, side, the only thing that's truly egregious is the portrayal of the reporter, because she is so cartoonish, it's laughable. Yeah. It's only good that she's not really in the movie very much, thank goodness. I mean, I don't think Olivia Wilde's a bad actress. This is just a badly written part.
Absolutely.
Well, frankly. And the head FBI guy, that to me is just like, he should be twirling his mustache. He's so blatantly doing things that are illegal, and he's so blatantly the villain.
I mean, I'll hand them this, though. All that actually did happen.
I know that the thing where he was brought in thinking that it was this training video, but the rest of it?
Yeah, apparently.
Really?
Yeah,
all of it?
They were really bad to him.
Huh.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he was kind of dumb enough to go along with it. Yeah. They were capitalizing on the fact that this guy sort of blindly followed authority and so desperately wanted to be treated as a peer, as a cop. And of course, that makes him very easy to manipulate, which is thankfully for him, the Sam Rockwell character, like, will you please stop helping these guys? You
which
know?
To me made it, like, weird in regards to his setup. Like, you know, the actor was fantastic. He took this character, this person, and he went with it. But the setup for him, and granted, it was weird how they dealt with the problematic aspects of this guy. Because this is a guy that he impersonated an officer and was arrested for it. He, you know, did things that were, you know, borderline illegal in his, you know, his security guard, you know, police stuff. He got kicked out of the force. Yeah,
very minor abuses.
Yeah,
it is
minor
power.
Abuses.
It is funny the way they, throughout the movie, he, like, continually has these jobs as security guards and police officers, and they show him, and he's shown over and over again that he isn't really fit to have this position. And, like, the movie has no comment on that.
Right. And
he's like, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Give him a badge and a gun.
Exactly. And if you're trying to make him sympathetic, you need to address this stuff other than going, yeah, I did that. It's like, no, these things matter.
I think it does matter. I mean, even this lawyer at one point goes, Richard, am I going to find any weird shit in
here? Well, yeah, I mean, the
once they see all the guns he has.
Yes, but in
they
regards
do a great
to the
job of making him flawed. You realize why this guy is a loser. What pisses me off about this is that they had the opportunity to humanize all the other characters. This would have been much more interesting if you had a bunch of characters who thought they were right, as opposed to a few. I mean, Olivia Wilde should have been twirling a mustache, except she's written as a female character.
And again, and I think it's like,
yeah.
Well, what I mean by that is, like, they had this, and they had characters acknowledge that he was problematic, but the overwhelming arc of the story in regards to the storytelling was, that really doesn't matter because in his heart he's a good guy. And it's like, that's
well,
not
actually,
quite how it works.
In real life it's not like that, but for what this movie's wanting to achieve, you can't explore that in this character, because the movie wants you to root for him as an underdog and a sympathetic character. If the movie really explores that in any real way, which would be a more interesting story to tell,
right.
But it's not the story that this movie wants to tell.
No, and I mean, you know,
it achieves what it
to
wants
some extent.
To
that didn't bother me though, because
no,
I'm like, it
either.
Establishes he's a real doofus. I mean,
it's
he's,
like once it got away from that, it was fine. But it's like when they focus on that, it's like
he's one grade above being like having some sort of mental retardation, you know what I mean? Like, he's just right above that stage. And I kind of got like from the movie, it's like, yeah, he did these things, but none of them were ever malicious when he was doing stuff. It's because like, oh, well, I know what a law enforcement officer would do in this situation, and I'm just trying to do the right thing to help people. They weren't coming out of a bad place. He was just too stupid to know that you shouldn't
again,
do that.
And again, that is the characterization of this person in the movie. We don't know in real life.
I don't know in real life.
But like what they're going for in this movie is definitely that characterization.
Right, exactly.
He's like a puppy dog who keeps knocking over shit. But he's just trying to, like, be good.
Yeah, who's constantly, like, that's, giving you that, like, big eyes. That's what they're giving you with slow him. Wagging tail, like, yeah. Please
and I guess
you,
it, it for me, it like was part of the death of the author. Because in the back of my mind, I was going, is this part of the characterization? Or is this Clint Eastwood putting in his libertarianism?
Well, I don't know. I found most of that, I did not see that being as a political part of it. I think that this was definitely political opportunism in the terms of this movie just so happens to be perfect timing before the next big election to be right. Like FBI government bad, media bad, right. People corn-fed folks from the South who mean well and collect guns.
Sam
good.
Rockwell literally offers Jewel a quid pro quo in his first scene together, and it's like, dude, this is like a totally cool normal thing. Yeah. This is what people do, you know? It's an honorable exchange.
Now, all that being said, this is a true story. Most of it is accurate. Like I said, the journalist stuff was way off base, apparently, which is, you can't, I mean, I didn't even know that before, because I was like, I'm going to wait to read the Wikipedia stuff until after I've watched the movie. And immediately, I was like, this feels way off immediately. But that was really the only main thing that I was like, that super pulled me out of the film. Because on the whole, I think Paul Walter Hauser is and Sam Rockwell and Kathy Bates are so likable and sympathetic and are all giving incredibly strong performances here. It's impossible not to root for this guy and feel bad for him. I mean, it's regardless of this movie's portrayal of the media, there have definitely been plenty of times the media has overstepped their bounds and have demonized people in cases where they really shouldn't have been. And this was an extreme example of exactly that happening. Yeah, you feel devastated for this poor son of a bitch.
That's what's interesting about the movie is, like, I find it more, like, I think it's a little more nuanced than credit we're giving it now, because I think we're all of a similar mindset when it comes to on the political spectrum here. But the movie itself isn't so overt where it's like beating Republican propaganda down your throat.
Right.
It's there and you can see it, but it isn't so bad where you feel dirty watching it. It's silly at times, and it's something you just have to, you know, when you wrestle with art from a political point of view that you don't agree with, but the art is still valid.
It, does, it doesn't help their case, though, when one of the victims was a black woman and she doesn't even get a name or, like, even words.
Right.
But the core three are so solid in regards to their characterizations.
Yeah, and I think even John Hamm is doing a very good job in his part. It's just not to the degree of Olivia Wilde. It's a little overwritten in its villainousness, you know?
Cartoony.
And any attempt to humanize them, which does happen, but it comes so late in the film that you're like, wow, where did this, why wasn't this in here earlier?
And also,
why did you try to make them human in the last 15 minutes of the movie?
And also, it was so fast, too. It's like they found the one fact that showed that he was completely innocent. It's like, oh, snap, my mindset is completely
that's
turned.
Some,
no.
Yeah. That was some real, like, children's movie type logic shit. It was like, I
it
couldn't believe it.
Encyclopedia Brown. There's the movie, no way he could have done that in 10 minutes.
It's like some Blue's Clues shit. It's not even like, the movie's not terribly interested in procedure of investigation. It's all about perception and media portrayal. So it's not really delving into that. But it's funny that that's the fact. Yeah. Like, this, I'm not going to give away what it is, but like, two different characters find this out on two different times, and it's like such an obvious thing, but it's also a thing that's could be easily disproved. Is like not like it's just like so dumb,
right? And you see them try
it's
to
two of them this. Prove it, and then the FBI agent is like, "We know,
yeah.
He just has an accomplice. That's all that is." It's like, it's twirl.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I would want to point out, and I was talking about this with Chris the other night. Because you know, I was telling him I had some reservations going into this. I actually enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I did. Once I just enjoyed it as a film and put it in the context of Clint Eastwood's career. This sort of pro-Republican, pro-Libertarian thing, that is nothing new from this guy. No one should act surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, almost all his films are anti-establishment.
Yeah, go peep a Dirty Harry movie.
He's always been anti-establishmentarian. But if you go back to his peers in the 1960s, when he started, he was never part of that whole counterculture. And what a bizarre change of events we've had. If you ask the average person or liberal in the 60s or 70s, they'd be like, don't trust the FBI. They're stooges for the government. They lie. They take away your constitutional rights. And the media are all corporate, you know, stooges who are bought and sold and owned by the corporations. You can't believe anything. Clint Eastwood also bought that. And you know what? Here we are 50 years later, and he hasn't changed. He stayed true to those very same principles, and now liberals are going, we should believe the FBI, and the media is telling the truth about everything. And I just think it's a fascinating news, reversal.
It is it is really fun. I think Mark Maron says the thing about, like, conspiracy theorists. It's like, it was more fun when, like, the hippies are conspiracy theorists. Like, the conspiracies stayed the same, but the wrong people are believing them now. Right. It's like, and it's like, that's all it is. It's really funny how things have flipped.
But these ones are amazingly consistent, and that's why at 89 years old, he's still making movies that are, if not necessarily better than his earlier work,
definitely not better than his earlier
but
work.
But are not bad. I mean, and he manages to get great cast every time. He occupies the same space in our culture as someone like, believe it or not, Woody Allen. A guy who is amazingly prolific, who is also problematic, yet every actor in Hollywood wants to work with him just so they can scratch it off the list and say, I worked with Eastwood.
I right. never would out of principle.
Well, you're not getting that call anyways. Yeah. None
if
of us
I
are.
If I ever did.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Alan, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, so I've kind of summed up, like, I did enjoy this movie quite a bit, even with all the, like, when we talked about, like, the missteps of it. It is kind of a classic Hollywood movie in the sense, which we're getting a lot more of these days. Like, it's like kind of the flip of Dark Waters, which is like political thriller from this like liberal environmentalist. It's like a similar, I mean, this is a drama, but it's playing in that same realm of movie, this type of budget, this type of story. And it's interesting, engaging. I had a weird, similar feeling to when I saw Dragged Across Concrete, which is way more overtly like Republican.
Yeah, it was Craig.
Guy did Bone Tomahawk,
who is way conservative.
And I enjoy that movie quite a bit, even though I disagree with everything in it. But it's like interesting art. Like, he's a talented filmmaker, and I think it's similar to this. Like, I finding myself in positions where I'm watching stuff that I don't agree with on like a political landscape or morally, but I'm still engaging with the art and seeing what he's saying and what he's attempting to say. And intentionality is important. And I think the intention that he's trying to get across with this movie, he succeeds mostly, with some mischaracterizations of media and stuff that's a little too much. But yeah, if you're basing a movie off its like intention and how well did it do that, I got to give this a pretty high score. It's not necessarily for me. So I will go 7.5 out of 10 weird applause breaks for a reporter as she walks into her job.
JC?
Yeah, I was really interested in this because I remember, I'm always way into the Olympics whenever it happens, and I remember, I don't remember the reporter's name, but I was watching TV live when, like, the bomb went off because somebody was reporting from there, and it, like, threw him off his game, and we didn't know what happened at the time. So, yeah, I've always been fascinated by this story, and, yeah, it's interesting to see all the stuff he went through and how much he was railroaded, but, yeah, going into it, I knew this was... It's almost like they went on purpose to find the one example or the most egregious example of when the media was wrong at demonizing someone and vilifying someone. And so, yeah, conservative Eastwood made a movie out of it. Yeah, it's better than some of his stuff lately. I feel like with the exception of The Mule, when he can make a movie that's not so much focused on politics, like a big sport, I really like Trouble with the Curve. Movies like that, when it's just like a simple story, this is really complicated, but I think he found a way to make it efficient and make it really, really compelling. The five set thing was a really pretty interesting realization, and overall, really good. I like Paul Hauser. He's really talented, and all the actors here did an amazing job. I would give it 6.5 out of 10 guns in the house.
Mindy?
excuse me. It's interesting that you mentioned Dark Waters, because I was kind of thinking about that when I was, you know, writing that, you know, theater review. because, you know, there are these movies that are coming out now based on true things. So you have movies like Dark Waters and The Report that deal with miscarriages of justice and deal with, you know, like in the case of The Report, the CIA, so a government agency, and, you know, I suppose a anyway, but big, you know, big, powerful organizations stomping the little guy. And in this one, like I said, the stomping feels cartoony. It feels like you're smashing them over the head and everybody should be wearing huge mustaches to twirl and be like, blah, ha, ha, every other sentence. And, you know, when the credits were rolling, I was looking up Wikipedia being like, all right, how much of this actually happened? This doesn't seem believable. And, you know, and especially after seeing those other films, it's like there are ways of portraying this misuse of justice without making it seem silly. And that's what this movie did in that regard. And that was a shame. Because when you focus away from the investigation and you focus on him and his mom and even to some extent the lawyer, even though he was a bit cartoony as well, and focused on the effect that this, you know, witch hunt had on him, which I think is supposed to be the point of the film, is the emotional toil of this wrong accusation and the media circus that happened because of it, that was solid. And if they had just focused on that instead of having the stupid cartoony bits with the FBI and with the journalists that just, it detracted from the solid nature of the emotional turmoil of it. And that was the turnoff for me. But when it focused on the three main characters, it was solid because it was an emotional journey of this is what happens when somebody is punished wrongly. So if you focus on that and just ignore that and, you know, try and do the death of the author as much as you possibly can. I know I couldn't completely. It's all right. But the fact that they added the cartoony government agency, it knocks down some points. So I'm going to say 7 adorable corgis that you have to take for a walk out of 10.
All corgis are adorable and make people better just by the act of owning
every
one.
Every time that corgi came out, I was just like, adorable royal family. Puppy!
Corgis haven't made those people any better.
You know, it's, you know,
and they are the kings and queens of corgis.
It's their only positive
quality.
They are
up to their assholes in corgis.
They get 1 star because of their corgis.
All right.
All right. Marco, what about you?
To kind of reiterate something that Mindy was saying, there is in this movie, I think, a very, very strong message. It's clear what that message is. I just feel like Eastwood could have gotten that exact same idea across but without having to stack the deck and making us kind of telling the audience what to think. Eastwood, I think, is always at his best when he's humanistic and he's actually able to make even his villainous characters seem real and relatable. And there is a potentially good story of a bunch of people doing what they all think is right, but operating at cross purposes and things getting really out of hand. Unfortunately, I don't think he and his writer, Billy Ray, trusted the audience enough to follow along with them. So it's very clearly signposted to us every step of the way who the bad guys are and why we should be rooting for Richard Jewell. And it's too bad because there's great work from everybody here. And especially, we haven't really sent... talked about how great Kathy Bates is. We just referred to the mom. She's great in this.
She's fucking
Kathy
Bates.
Is.
I mean, come on.
I mean, Kathy Bates crying is every woman I have ever seen who's crying because she has a child that she wants to protect and knows that she can't help. And if you've ever seen that up close, that's what it looks like. It looks like Kathy Bates in this movie. And it was really affecting to me. John Hamm, charisma, just coming out of the man's pores, he can actually make this underwritten role work. Unfortunately, Olivia Wilde is the weakest link in this film. I docked a whole point off just for her, and I can't blame her. She's a fine actress, and she's obviously doing what she was told to do. I'm going to have to give this 6.5 donuts you eat while crying tears of joy.
you know, you were saying that, like, I think everybody's saying to some degree it's a shame that it's so cartoonish, and why does it have to be this broad? Why isn't it a little bit more, like, thoughtful, if you will, instead of so simple? And the reason is because he's aiming this movie at middle America. He's aiming this movie at people who don't normally go see Oscar films and are going to get turned off by films that have too much nuance going on in it because they don't want nuance. And Eastwood isn't chasing nuance here. He's made this basically into a fable. And that's fine, I guess. I mean, it's a little troublesome to me, but it's not my place to judge in terms of art. I can judge it politically, certainly. I was
going to say, you do that all the time.
I can judge it politically, but it's not my place in terms of art to judge it for its political content when there's nothing inherently wrong with telling a story that way. I've seen very much stronger messaged liberal films that are told as a fable as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just not my particular wheelhouse, that stuff. But I do think the performances are all strong here. Like I said, the problem is not Olivia Wilde's performance. The problem is the character is just terribly fucking written. And also, let's not forget, for everyone saying who are slut shaming her, John Hamm is a slut as well.
He's a big old slut.
So, like, he's
a mimbo,
equally guilty of using sex in this film. So let's not try and point all that fingers at it for that. It's just that her character is just quite frankly ridiculous. I mean, there's a point where she has like this absurd change of heart in the film that's just so like, really? Yeah. And the film tries to convince you maybe she's not all that bad. And like, no, she's this is ridiculous. You can't buy it. She's the one character who doesn't fit into this fable well at all. And it sticks out like a sore thumb. And it's a shame because I think, honestly, without her, or if the character had been written with some amount of nuance, that I would have forgiven a lot more about it.
Yep.
But she becomes this reflecting pool to a lot of the other political elements that are also a little ham-handed in the way they're handled. But thank God the movie spends most of its time with Paul Walter Hauser and Sam Rockwell, who are terrific together. Hauser is proving that he is just one of the more interesting new actors on the scene today. Mm-hmm. After This and I, Tanya, but really strong performances in both. He has he's just this lovable doofus in this movie, and you're like, God, you can't help but feel terrible for him because he's too stupid to know what's happening to him. And he really does, the character anyway, I can't speak as to the real man, but the character does kind of have a heart of gold. I mean, even his mistakes he makes are coming from a good place, the character. So you kind of fall in love with him in your way, even at the same time going, I would never be friends with that guy in real life.
Real serious loser vibes.
But I did overall like this film. I certainly didn't love it. I think there's been Oscar awards talk for Kathy Bates. And while I think she's really good in here, she's only really has a couple scenes where they give her a chance to shine. And yes. I don't feel like it was enough to start seriously nodding at her for supporting actress.
She's been better in better things.
Oh, most certainly. But overall, I think I'm going to give this, 7... Probably 7 sets, because we probably forgot one, out of 10.
I think it was that time he was crying in the bathroom.
Oh, there you go. There was a bathroom set. We forgot about the bathroom there. 7. There. It's done.